For members only, Golf Smarter number 268, published on February 1, 2011.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Clear Key Golf with our granddad of the mental game, Kerry Mumford.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
I guess the big thing for me, Fred, is to start in at a point where I look at what I see missing that is so vital to the growth and development of a player's game, and that's been the thing that's occupied most of my time over the last couple of years anyway, and the more I look at it, the more the evolution takes place in terms of what I understand needs attention. And the things that, first of all, the biggest thing that I think needs attention from everybody associated with the game is to recognize that the physical issues and the mental issues in the game, we must learn to balance those out, and they are not balanced. People will tell you they are, but they are not. The most of what occupies people's time is the essence of how to make a golf swing. You know, guys get on there and they say, tell me why I'm flipping my wrists. How do you stop flipping? What does it mean to cast the club? Why am I hitting my golf shot so high? And these questions are like that and go on forever. And I keep wondering in my head, what are we teaching these people? I mean, what are we helping them learn would be more a more appropriate way of putting it.
Yeah. But, all right. Come on, Kerry. Let's get this thing officially started here.
Okay. I thought you had started.
Well, you know, I just wanted to say welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Kerry.
Oh, thank you.
We've been chatting, obviously. We're just going to let people in on this conversation. But
I don't mind that.
Put a quarter in you, and it's like, this is a great topic for you, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't even take a quarter. A dime will do it.
Yeah. Hey, and a quarter is not even worth a dime right now. So
that's true. You got that right.
So we got to introduce you back to our audience. It's been a long time, and hopefully our Golf Smarter members have gone back and listened to some of the episodes I've done with you. And if they haven't, after you listen to this, you will go back and listen to some of the shows we've done with Kerry Mumford. But I don't know if you would be – you're probably too humble to do this, but are you like one of the nothing personal, one of the grandfathers of the mental game of golf? I mean, are you one of the who was before you that got that right?
Oh, there have been a number of people well before me, but I tell you the truth, I really can't name them all for two reasons. One, when you reach the age of 82, which I am now, my memory doesn't shelter things like that very well. And the other thing is that when I started looking at the mental game, I came out of that psychiatric context from the New York State mental health system, and when you come at it from a direction like that, I didn't really bother to, well, let me put it another way. My upbringing in looking at things about people was always in the context of, don't ask anybody else what they think before you determine what you think. Mm. And I got that from doctors, the good doctors that I ever knew. They didn't check to see what somebody else thought your diagnosis was before they made their own investigation and discoveries. Then after they did that, they would go and compare it with some others, but they did not want to be influenced by the ideas of others before they made up their mind what it looked like. And I followed that pattern throughout. I did not look at all the father figures in whatever was the early stages of the mental game, and there really wasn't much there. There were people who talked about it, but not in the form of a school of thinking. It wasn't formalized in any way. The formalization of it has come much later, and I suppose in that context I would be one of the early birds, but not one of the, I mean, if you go back to 1990, Golf Magazine did an article on the mental game, a special article, special issue, and I and 13, or I think it was 14 of us all together that they named, okay? And in looking back, that should have been my first clue that not many people were going to pay early attention to what I had to say because it didn't sound like what everybody else was saying.
Hmm.
And that was true. The article gave the kernel of what each one of those other 13 people said about the mental game, said nothing about mine.
Interesting. So, this approach about making your mind up first and then, I mean, are you then going to, you know, listen to the feedback, listen to suggestions, and possibly let that influence you before, I mean, even though you've had your mind made up, or your mind made up, we're set, we're done?
Well, it wasn't quite like that. Let me see if I can put it into words. That's all. No. You're touching the right points, because there are going to be other people who are asking that same question. What happened was I landed on Mars while everybody else was sitting around still thinking about going there.
Mm.
So it was not hard to distinguish between Mars and Earth. That's a far-fetched illustration, but you get the picture.
Well, listen, we all went through the 60s.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, it wasn't like I would – if somebody came back and said, well, why does this work? What I found myself doing was spending a lot of time sitting at – see, a lot of this shaped itself when I was – during those 15 years I taught in the PGA – National PGA Education Program.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of built around that. The pieces came together in the course of doing those things, because I would be sitting at home in between sessions, and I would be thinking, now – nobody's asked me this question, and I would enumerate a question. I say, but I need to be able to answer that question, or discuss it, or dismiss it, or do something with it, because I'm not going to stand in front of a group of professional people and say, I don't know, you know. So I frequently had to spend time unraveling a question in order to get at the heart of it. And doing that over a period of time got me to a place, took me to a place that was outside conventional wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Conventional wisdom was saying this bunch of things over here on the side, and I was saying this other group of things over here, and I would have to stop and look at it like, I'll give you some modern illustrations, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I have been watching article upon article, website upon website come out talking about mental toughness.
And you sound disgusted.
Well, I am. I'm saying, what in the blazes do they mean by mental toughness? What is that? Is it, you're supposed to get a steel helmet that you wear to protect your brain, or you get an armor suit that you wear around so that nobody can get inside your gut or your head, or you can be shielded from everything that goes on around you? And all of a sudden it dawned on me, people in our time and age have no recognition of what it means to separate the ways in which the mind works on the conscious level and the non-conscious level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sitting there one day going through that little sequence, and I ran across a rather profound article. It's not a long article by Larry Squires, who's a professor of neuroscience in the psychiatry and psychological division of University of California San Diego Medical Center. Okay, mm-hmm. And they did some research and testing, and they found that the problem is that with us in today's world is that we are so cognitive and so wrapped up in conscious thinking that we have literally boxed off our ability to build habits, because habits are stored in a different place from our conscious thinking. The our conscious thinking is handled by roughly the technical term is the hippocampus. That's one part of the brain, and our habitual learning is handled by the basal ganglia, which is in a separate place of the brain. It's in the back of the brain, and the hippocampus is toward the front. It's actually on the side, but it's toward the front. What happens is, and here's what they discovered when they were running these tests, is that we are so good at our conscious thinking and our cognitive thinking that we are literally putting a cap on the entryway to the non-conscious, so nothing gets through. That's why players constantly are saying, "Geez, I was playing so good yesterday, and it came out there today, and I could not hardly hit the ball." And where does it go? And I keep wanting to say to them, "Look, do you practice walking before you walk? Do you forget how to do those things from one day to the next? Do you forget how to drive your car, brush your teeth, put on your clothes?" And what people don't understand is you use exactly the same fundamental ways of learning and acting for playing golf as you do for all those simple things that we do thousands of times a day. And nobody is bothered to put golf in the context of what people do normally. They make it sound like it's something often totally exceptional in life, and it isn't. It's part of the mainstream, and we can do it as part of the mainstream. It's part of the mainstream in a way we have not done a very good job of explaining to people how you learn after you pass your adolescence. See, but up until we're about 14 or 15 years old, Mother Nature it just gives us all kinds of support. Now, this is built into the system. I don't know why it's built this way, and I don't care why it was built this way, but you can look at it and you can see it. How many times have you heard a 20-year-old say, "Gosh, I wish I could putt like I did when I was 12?
I've heard 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds all say that.
That's right. Now, what happens is as they get older, they realize – no, they don't realize – they don't realize that they didn't learn how they were learning back when they were kids. We know we learned, but nobody bothered to try to look at it and say, how did that happen? How did we do that? Okay, so that's where the 32-ball drill came from. Okay, I'm sure you're acquainted with that from when we were together.
Please explain it, because not everyone gets...
Okay, first of all, learning that motor learning has to get to that non-conscious thing there. Okay, if I just learn it and memorize it consciously, that's not going to do me any good. I got to transfer that conscious memory over to the non-conscious, and I do that with a 32-ball drill in this way. First of all, I went back and researched how learning takes place as best I could, and by covering a lot of research territory, I found that such things as if you do something once, you forget 50% of it immediately and 25% more within 48 hours. If you do something twice, it's the same number. Three times, it's the same number. But if you do the same thing four times in succession, you get 90% retention. okay? Now,
is that a good way to remember people's names?
Yeah, sure. Yes, it is.
It's a terrible thing in the diary.
It is. And it probably would, if I had time to stop and do that with everything, it would probably help me at my age, too. But that's another condition. Yeah. Anyway, that's a four-dimensional approach, okay? So here's what you do. If you want to learn something, let's say that you've got to take something as simple as the grip. If you want to get the grip into habit, what you do is you grip your club looking at what you're doing four times, okay? And then you quit looking at it and you say a clear key and grip your club four times.
You're throwing in words now that I want to make sure we educate.
Key?
Yeah, I want to get into clear key, but okay, we have to educate the people.
We'll get into clear key.
Yeah,
we'll get into that.
I still use mine, by the way, from the time that we were together a couple years ago.
That's good. We got a lot of people doing it. By the way, the new group that are using clear key are in the cricket family in Australia.
Really?
Yeah, this past year, one of my colleagues down in Australia took three of his team members, teenagers, and he had one that he worked on with batting and a clear key, and he worked on with one the bowling, which is their pitching, with a clear key, and fielding. He was even working on fielding with a clear key. At the end of the season, those three guys got the top honors in those three divisions.
Wow.
The one that he worked with on a clear key for batting won the batting prize, the bowler won the bowling prize, and the fielder won the fielding prize.
That's amazing. Well, I also noticed that on your blog you had a posting there that an NBA player had a clear key that he was using to improve his free throws.
Well, I can't.
It may not have been, I guess, it was an unconscious clear key. But he was using that kind of method?
Yeah, and I can't think of the guys. I can't think
Dwight
of the player.
Dwight Howard.
Dwight was the one, yeah, that was doing it. He told what it was, and I can't remember right this second what it was.
He was singing a song.
Oh, yeah. Okay, but then the other guy was, I can't think of the other guy's name, that I used to watch him. I don't know that he was doing that, but his lips were moving all the time he was preparing to shoot, and when he shot free shots.
Really?
So I have a sneaking notion that he was doing something like what I'm talking about. Well, we know that Oral Hershiser did it when he won when he pitched all that good stuff, and the Dodgers won the World Series.
Hey, that was the 1988 World Series and against the Oakland A's, and they were a client of mine at the time, and that was my number one team. So I don't. That's
yep.
a really that Kirk Gibson home run was tough enough for me. I don't want to go there.
Yeah, but Hershiser got on. He was on Johnny Carson's show, and when that was over, and Johnny Carson said, "How do you handle the tension and the nervousness with that?" He says, "I just sing the doxology." So you know, I'm sure that religious people probably thought that he had a religious experience going there, but what he was doing was using a universal a concept and a universal pattern of behavior, and that is you keep the conscious mind out of it in order to get to the non-conscious, and that's why you got to move your building blocks for motions from the conscious memorization point over to the non-conscious, and that's what you do with a 32-ball drill. That got us back to the 32-ball drill.
Right, and I still want to get to, if you can, the clear key, what it is, how to make it work, and how it relates to golfer.
Yeah, actually, the clear key can be almost anything that you want to say. I like for a clear key to have a little rhythm in it. Not quite, it doesn't have to be like poetry, but it can be. I like for that to to be there. It's got to be long enough to cover your swing from stem to stern with the longest club in your bag, and you use the same clear key with every club in your bag, because it doesn't make any difference if you've got it too long. What makes a lot of difference is if it's not long enough. So, I may be saying...
I'll tell you what mine is.
What's
tell you
that?
Mary had a little lamb. I wish I had one too.
Okay, you're still see. That's the one that I sometimes start people out with, and it sticks with a lot of them because it resonates. I mean, it's one that's familiar to them, and they can remember it and that kind of thing. But it's
nonsensical as well.
Yeah, that's right, and it gives no command. So you have to stay away from anything that gives a command. Some people will ask me, "Well, can I count?" And if you said 1, 2, 3, what happens is everybody's so conditioned to 1, 2, 3, go that they take it back on 2 and change direction on 3 and downswing on 4, and that's putting it back in the manual framework because that's a command position. See, all of this centers around some other things too. Let me. I hope I don't get you too far off of field, but the concept that is applied to golf is controlling everything.
Mm-hmm.
That is 180 degrees wrong. The concept needs to be management, because the more you try to control what you do with a golf club, the worse your swing's going to get. You have to put it in a position to be freely released. And the control is stifling. Control creates anxiety. It does all kinds of things that are backward. And that's what happens to a lot of people. You hear that talked about all the time. That becomes sort of the word control becomes a backdrop for control your temper, control your swing, control your downswing, control your grip pressure, control this, control that. And all that's doing is making everybody consciously aware of all these little bits and pieces, and that is trapping everything in the conscious mind and not allowing it to go to the 98% where the action takes place. It's like this. Look, your conscious mind is like the keyboard on your computer. It's an input device. The non-conscious mind is like your operating system and where you store all the programs. We don't see those. I've got icons on my desktop. If I want a program, I hit that icon and the program comes up to play with. Okay? Just like this Skype. I mean, I got to hit the icon and bring it up. I got to hit a mouse, make a mouse movement and all those things. And so all the things that we use for input devices are like the conscious mind, and the things that are output devices are all stored in the non-conscious. And what we're doing is we're ripping ourselves off by spending so much time trying to memorize everything consciously that it never gets a chance to go into the non-conscious.
I've noticed that you use the word non-conscious, and I've heard so many other people call it the unconscious mind.
Yeah, I know that.
You're choosing that? You're consciously staying away from unconscious?
Not staying away from it. The unconscious and the subconscious are pity-pat pieces of the non-conscious. I'm just using the whole ball game instead of just two little parts of it.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So it's everything that is not conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be see, the subconscious got everybody thinking in terms of subliminal kinds of things. And so you had people out there saying, well, I tell you what, let's make this recording and you go listen to it tonight and tomorrow you'll play golf better.
That's the whole idea.
Well, it was supposedly a subliminal approach to things. Didn't work, but that's okay. Some people made some money doing it, but
yeah.
That's unfortunately unfinished. It leaves you with unfinished business. And that, of course, here is the critical issue with the whole thing. See, the period of time that I'm most concerned about and direct most of my attention toward is a what I call the 14-second window in which during which you time you've got a club in your hand and you are moving it toward impact with a little white ball. And nobody pays any attention to that except me.
14 seconds seems like an awful long time. Can you give us
That's the window. You don't have to use the whole window.
Okay.
The window here, and here's the reason for it. Drivers and persuaders, the two of the styles that are the fastest paced, typically get their business taken care of in 8-9 seconds. After this is immediately following pre-shot. Now that incorporates the time spent walking to the ball and setting up and then making the swing. Okay? Because all of that is critical to a good finished golf swing. You have to separate functions. Pre-shot's manual. Everything you're thinking, you're using your conscious mind completely when you're in pre-shot. Now you got to separate, and you've got to open the door to get to the non-conscious. So it takes about in watching players, and this is 35 years of informed observation that I'm talking about now, and observing players, what they do is it takes them about 5 to 6 seconds to reach the level where they have shifted the gears so that they are now into the automatic mode and they can accommodate what's going on in the non-conscious smoothly and with no interference. So that transition period is required to eliminate the potential interference that's there from anxiety and that kind of thing. So once they do that, now they're over the ball and they've used up the first 5 to 6 seconds of that 14, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, drivers and persuaders who are faster will get it. They will finish the rest of the task in 2-3 more seconds, okay? Craftsmen and analyzers who are much slower take longer, and the analyzer is the slowest. And I've had analyzers who could successfully work inside 14 seconds, but nobody can work outside of 14 seconds because the conscious application of a clear key is not sufficient to hold everything in position without interference any longer than that.
Hmm.
Now, I'm saying that I realize it needs a lot more explanation than that, but we're limited somewhat.
Yeah, well, seems like we're flying at 35,000 feet here on this because I'm sure this is a much longer discussion, but I'm getting the sense. Yeah.
If you're getting the sense of it, that's what we're talking about. So there is a window there or an opening that is available for all players that's 14 seconds long. Nobody's going to – rarely does anybody use it all, okay? But it's the clear key process will keep all of that clear, clean, smooth for that long – for that length of time. But only in a very rare exception could it go beyond that.
So okay? You're saying that you cannot go from that pre-shot routine to the contact consciously? Is it a conscious effort to get to that non-conscious?
You got to have everything for this to work at its max. The person must have good habits for walking into the ball, for setting up, for alignment, for everything he's going to do with that club in his hand.
All repeatable.
All built in, just like walking to the post office box. He's got to be able to do it with no more thought than that. He knows where the post office box is. Now, if he starts down the driveway, he does not have to keep his eyes glued on that post office box. Mm-hmm. Now, he will have to have that in view at some time. But usually it is, if you know where the sidewalk is, you're just walking down the sidewalk. I can walk up to my setup now. I couldn't do it originally, and be in alignment. Now, that doesn't mean that I'll never get out of alignment because I'm a human being. What it does mean is that I do have a good, sound, working alignment habit, and I don't have to constantly check myself to see if I'm lined up. Okay? Mm-hmm. Same thing is true of grip and grip pressure and all those things. But now we got to go back and we got to backtrack a little bit because the clear key does some other things besides releasing what you by helping you build in what you need to build into your habit repository in the non-conscious. It does that, but it also releases what you've got in the non-conscious so that it's useful to you beyond that. Okay, so you can play with it, in effect. And it does one other rather fantastic thing, because you're using a clear key which has no command in it, and it is not it's simply keeping anxiety at bay. It keeps, and that of course most people like to call that pressure, but the pressure is actually a result of anxiety, and the reason is anxiety makes people nervous. The word makes people nervous. I laugh at that all the time, but nobody wants to hear the word anxiety because they think it's a disease, and it is. And I've tried to explain to people, look, anxiety is your friend. If you did not have anxiety, you would not have an early warning system. And if you didn't have an early warning system, you would have been hit long ago by a car speeding down the highway because you would not have been paying any attention. Right. You would have stuck a fork in an electric socket when you were a kid, and you would not be here today. So anxiety is just a normal part of human life, but because it's on a continuum, I think people only experience it at its when it's headed toward infinity, and so they don't notice it on a normal day-to-day basis, and unless something comes along to punch at them or strike at them all of a sudden, and then they do notice it. But anxiety is the trigger for all sorts of physiological change, and it happens instantly. If you get anxiety, there's so many different things that can. I've run out of space trying to enumerate the number of the name and number of glitches that you can have in your golf swing because anxiety got into it and made a physiological change. I mean, things like coming over the top, reverse pressure, reverse pivot. I mean, balance problems where people, I can't make a good turn, they'll say. I can't get the club all the way back. I can't get it all the way through. I go over the top on the end of my swing. There's so many things. Now, you get ready for this one because I'm going to throw you one that you haven't heard from me before because this one has just emerged more recently. Okay?
I'm ready.
All right, the glitches that golfers encounter, I can take the profile that I do. You've seen the profile yourself, and I can show you on the profile what kind of glitches you are going to run into.
Wow.
Because
you're saying it's predictable?
Look, absolutely. There are two ways in which you can mess up the effectiveness of your style, your God-given style, okay? One way is to try to play this game. Now, I'm just talking about – now, right now, I'm only talking about golf because most people have a social persona, you know, that they use with other people. But I'm talking about things that are solitary, self-initiated, self-maintained, self-executed. And golf is probably number one on that list. And you do not have to be socially adept to play golf.
Right.
Golf is not a social game. Now, you may play it. You may involve sociality in it, but when you with a foursome or with, you know, a team event or something like that, but when you've got the club in your hand, you're moving toward impact with the ball, you are on your own. You are strictly a single.
Right, okay. And there's no one on the other end of the ball, like in tennis, right?
That's right.
Or
that's
throwing right. a pass, throwing a pick. Okay.
That's right. I'm and it's you. Not a it's, golf's just not a team sport. Okay.
Right.
So the I can if a person overextends his style. In other words, if a driver who is direct and who is assertive becomes over direct and over assertive or aggressive, he's going to be increasing his intensity. Okay. If a person tends to back away a little bit and become a little hesitant, he is going the other direction. He's not overdoing, he's underdoing. Okay. Now, if you overdo, you're going to get one kind of set of glitches. If you underdo, you're going to get another kind of a set of glitches, different sort. For instance, restricting your style will produce things like, let's see, it will produce things like decelerating in the downswing of your golf swing.
Deadly.
If you are overextending, it will produce forced acceleration in your downswing.
Also deadly.
And you'll get two different kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
The deceleration will frequently lead to balls going going left to right. Overacceleration will frequently lead to balls going right to left.
Yeah.
So it's those are just two minor illustrations. There are tons more, but I can look at the profile between the left side of the profile and the right side of the profile and tell you what's predictable about that.
Wow.
So then you've got another concert that goes in there too, that goes with the energy factor. Two South African professors did a research study, and they discovered what I've said for years and years and years, but had no way to prove it, that energy comes with genetic causality involved in it. In other words, everybody does not have the same given amount of energy, okay? And energy, we used to think that energy could be restored. Okay, let's say you had a hard day at work and you worked too hard. You need to get out and run a little, or you need to do this, that, or the other. Or you've been sitting around reading a book. You need to get out and get some exercise. And we had all these little fastidious things that we thought would help people relieve and reduce stress. That doesn't really do that, because stress is stress. It doesn't make any difference whether it's seated or running. If it's stressful, it's stressful, and all stress drains energy. Here's the way it works. When you sleep or rest, you restore energy, but it comes out of what amounts to a closed cell battery. That's figuratively, of course, but you get your supply at birth. You get your lifetime supply at birth, and you use it up as you go along, and you can pull it off by resting, but it's not quite like having a savings account in the bank, and you can't put more in it. But a lot of people think you can restore energy to the mainframe. You cannot. Once you use it up, it's going to be. Did you ever run into a poem called The One Horse Shay?
No.
Well, it's 99 years, and this guy, it was a poem, and he'd driven his one horse shay around, and at 99 years, it just totally disintegrated. And I think of that poem every time I think of these guys doing the research, because and some people have massive amounts of energy, and some people don't have as much. Now, everybody's got enough. That's not the problem. But what the clear key process does in relation to energy is it helps people conserve their energy. Now, I did do several years ago. It's been well, it's been a lot of years now, but I got hold of the scorecards from several different courses, and they knew what I was doing. I was checking to see how people scored over 18 hole period. And what I found was it holds 15, 16, 17, and 18 were the poorest scored holes across the board. Mm-hmm. In a round of 18 holes. And people would, the discussions were always, well, people get to the end, they choke, or they start thinking too much about their score, blah, 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 that
or,
kind of.
Or run out of gas, the wheels are falling off.
That's what's happening. In more cases than not, it's running out of gas.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you're running out of gas, it would be easier to make you choke, too.
Of course.
You stop. Think about it. But the people who use clear keys are not running out of gas.
You know, between the clear keys and also to me, what I do when I'm playing around a golf is I'm grazing grazing the entire round as opposed to having a meal in the middle of it. So I'll just nurse a bag of nuts for the whole thing so my energy level stays constant on that.
Sure. And I'm glad you brought that up because I'm not attempting to say that physical energy is not an important ingredient, but the energy that the profile measures is physical, mental, emotional. Mm-hmm. It's the whole bag.
No, emotional is big in golf.
Oh yeah, you bet your bippy.
Especially by the 15th hole, it could be huge.
You do have to have appropriate strength conditioning. You do have to have appropriate dieting. You mm-hmm, have to have mm-hmm.
your nutrition.
You know, all of those things are part of it, and it helps to know things like biomechanics. See, and what I often get into with people is they think I'm ignoring all those other things, and I'm not really. I'm just because I'm focusing so much attention on the mental part of the game, it sounds like I'm ignoring those other things, but I'm not. They all figure into the equation. Mm-hmm. And we have to understand all of them and how they fit together. What bothers me, though, is that those guys in all those other fields are treating their field like it's the only one out there.
Yeah.
And they, of course, they may hear that. They may think it sounds that same way when I'm talking about the mental side of the game too, so that I have to back off from that being too much of a critical issue, if you get my drift.
I do. So I want to ask you something here. So you talked about to be able to repeat something, you do it to ingrain it, you need to repeat it four times.
Right.
You talked about that. And then you talked about the 14-second window.
Okay, but then let me – I guess I need to go back and let's take the four thing and take it forward to its full dimension.
Okay.
What I do with players is in order to build a habit, here's the easiest way to go about it. Mm-hmm. You take something that you need to learn, a motion that you need to learn, and you think about it while you're doing it for the first four times that you make a pass.
Okay.
All right. Then you – do all your thinking about what you want to do coming up in what amounts to a pre-shot, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then you turn on your clear key and you do four with that same skill or whatever it is that you're working on.
No, let's talk golf. Yeah, we're just, you know.
Yeah, okay. Then you repeat that doublet, four on manual and four on a clear key. You repeat that doublet four times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now you have used the principle of four in every way possible with that what you're doing to gain understanding and memory and retention for what it is you're doing. Okay. So four plus four times four, princess times four, is 32. So 32 is the minimum number of swings you need for the maximum gain in learning at the motor level.
Okay.
It also works at the memory level, but
sure.
That's another thing that's outside the concern here. But that's the way the 32 ball drill works, and it gets used in there. And now people always ask me, well, how many 32 ball drills can I do? As many as you feel comfortable doing. Just don't get to the place where you're wearing yourself out at doing it.
Because then it becomes counterproductive.
That's right. Becomes counterproductive. So the rest of the research on learning is that we learn best in short doses with little rest periods in between. And the 4-4-4-4 fits that dimension too, because players will rake up four balls and then they take a little break by raking up four more balls. And that's all the break you need. It's more like you're telling your non-discriminatory system that you're making a shift in what you're doing.
And it leads to a question that I've been thinking about as you're speaking, especially on that 14-second window, is the driving range. Is the practice range where your routine on the practice range, generally from what I've observed, is not even close to what your routine is on the golf course.
That's right. And we do need to learn to practice in the way that we play rather than try to play in the way that we practice.
Hmm.
So if we use – and a lot of people do this. They say, okay, what I do when I go out to the range to practice is I will visualize playing a hole. And so I'll take my driver and I'll hit a drive, and then I'll hit a 4-iron or a 5-iron or a 9-iron into the green. And then I'll – they don't putt. They save that for the short game area. But you get the picture. What they're doing is mimicking a round of golf. And many of them will even visualize a hole that they may have had trouble playing, or one that they like to play, or whatever, and so they sort of mimic playing on a course. Now, those you have to remember, though, that those really are different. I hear guys say, "Well, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to try to put myself under pressure when I'm practicing." I'm sorry, but that doesn't work. Your system is not that foolish. It's not that stupid. It knows you're not on the golf course, and it knows that you're not engaged in that way. You cannot. I've said it this way to people. I say, look, you can sit home in your study if you want, and you can visualize all day long what you will do if somebody puts a gun in your face and how you're going to handle it. But I will guarantee you that
putting a gun in your face.
Yeah. I will guarantee you that you will never be able to mimic how you will feel when you're walking down a street and somebody actually puts a gun in your face.
Yeah.
There's no way you can duplicate those things. And golf has more points and frames of moments in which anxiety can interrupt what you're doing than any other thing I know of.
Well, golf is just a series of disasters that you have to deal with.
Waiting to happen. That's right. Yeah. but the people are, what's fascinating is the people who have learned to do this very well, they are bringing back pretty solid reports all the way through. And by the way, one quickly before we run out of time.
That was 25 minutes ago.
Oh, whoa, was it? Okay. Well,
I'm not going to stop you, though.
You can piece some of this together, can't you?
Oh, no, I'm just going to let the whole thing run. This is one of our members-only episodes, so usually I'll go 30 minutes, but we're already up to 47, so,
Okay, well,
that's recording. We've been talking for an hour.
Yeah, well, this one is this one will be a quickie, but I have a friend. I can't release all the information yet because all the final stuff is not in, but I have a colleague friend out in Arizona who has put novices and advanced players onto the EEG machine, put all the stuff on them, and had them do swings without clear key, and then follow that with clear key.
Mm-hmm.
When they're swinging without clear key, the brain waves go all over the place. When they're swinging with clear key, it settles right down and becomes normal.
Wow. Well, that's not a great testimony to
it
the
absolutely
success
is.
Of the clear key system.
it doesn't make any difference whether you're chipping or putting or long game or what. It just settles right down. It neutralizes it. And what they did was they demonstrated with the EEG what I have said since the beginning but couldn't prove. I mean, and there have been a number of things that have happened in the last couple of years that provided for me either directly or indirectly support for the things that I have been saying all this time that have come directly out of research done by other people. And that's even better than if I was doing it.
So, well, you know, one of the things that you said before, we got a guttural reaction from you when, you know, people use the word mental toughness, the phrase mental toughness,
oh, yeah.
And how you reacted to that. I'm just curious, what is the reaction that you get when a lot of people, a lot of instructors, golf instructors, talk about muscle memory?
Same kind. Mental toughness and muscle memory kind of go into the same. I got them in the same box. They're in the same. I don't even have them in separate file positions. They're in the same file position because they're both misnomers, is what they are. Mm-hmm. See, I will tell you my definition of mental toughness, okay? If you have the knowledge that you need and you have the skill that you have turned into a habit developed, you will be mentally tough because there's absolutely nothing can shake you. If you know what it is you need to do and you know how to do it and you have practiced it to the point where it's now a habit, there's absolutely nothing that can knock you out of the saddle. That's what. But nobody's doing that, you see. So they have to pump mental toughness as a concept. Mm-hmm. And so you get all these things. I saw on YouTube a professor who teaches sports psychology at Austin Peay State University explained mental toughness. He took a pop can and crushed it with his hand, okay? Then he took one that was full. That one was empty. He took one that was full and showed that you can't crush that one so easily. He says, so mental toughness is having a fullness.
And your reaction to that was?
Silence, just like we just what we had right there. Because what in the world does that mean? I mean, fullness. Does that mean that I should eat a big meal before I go and play golf?
No,
I know what it means. I know what it means. It means
that you're not going to take another class with that instructor.
Yeah, get yourself one of those golf bags that has a golf club that you can put vodka in all the way down the shaft and fill yourself up as you go around the course. That should take care of everything.
Well, let's make sure that we tell everybody about your website. It is clearkeygolf.com. And there's a lot of information to get you. If this didn't give you a good taste of where Carrie can take you, his website will take you even further into it. And then he's also saying, the thing that I can't share with you right now, but you know, is that I've been watching Carrie the whole time because we're on Skype connection and he uses video and I've been so entertained just watching it. So I guess I've been silent when I should be saying something, but I'm just watching Carrie, so I can't say anything. I've been having way too much fun. So clearkeygolf.com.
I didn't mean to be a distraction in that sense.
Well, you haven't been watching me, so that's good.
There's so much more there. What we've done for an hour is sort of hit the high spots, and that's okay. I mean, that maybe it will get some people to begin to think a little about some of these things, and they're all important, and I find them in strange and unusual places, and try to make sure that I still keep everything in context. In other words, I'm not scattering things all over the lot, except when I spend time like we're doing right here, talking back and forth, and I'm touching more bases than probably we need to touch. But right. you get the drift, and hopefully your listening audience will appreciate that part of it too.
So I think that they definitely will. If they're still with us, they definitely will. I mean, and you can see on the website that Kerry will do Skype conversations with you. You work with we talked about your profiles. You mentioned the profiles briefly, so he'll work one-on-one with you, and you work at golf schools as well to that people have. What golf schools are you involved with?
Well, basically, right now I do my own thing is done wherever I need to be,
Right, but and that's
other
the
than
of
that,
Skype, sure.
It's just Bird Golf right now.
Bird Golf Academy out in Arizona.
Right, okay. And that's those two things keep me roundly busy enough to satisfy me. Let's put it that way.
I bet. Well, and I'm also very I'm honored, actually, to see on the links on your website that Golf Smarter Podcast was on there. Thank you. That was
I have it on there.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Kerry Mumford, the godfather of the metal game. This was awesome, Kerry. It was great to talk to you. Thanks so much for your time.
Well, it's nice talking to you, Fred. And if you get too much noise off in the left field, come back and we'll do a 10-minute clarification or something.
10 minutes? Come on, well, you can't do 10 minutes.
I know, but I hate to take up too much of your time.
Oh no! I love the fact that you gave me so much of yours.
Okay.
All righty.
Good to talk. See ya.
Have a great year.
You too. Bye bye.
And by the way, I recorded this interview on a Friday, and after not playing for nearly a month, went out the next morning in lousy weather and shot an 83 with 3 birdies. Unheard of for me. This guy is awesome. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.